You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today, we'll be going to the archives to hear a presentation by Hugh Lynn Cayce. Hugh Lynn Cayce served his father's Association for Research and Enlightenment, the ARE, as chairman of the board before his death. He was also author of the book Venture Inward, an examination of safe and unsafe methods of exploring personal psychic experiences, and The Outer Limits of Edgar Cayce's Power, which explores the relatively small number, 200, of readings that appeared to be inaccurate.
I had a telephone call just 3 weeks ago. The woman was hysterical. She was incoherent. She had gotten out of a hospital and had come back home after being treated. They had not even intended to release her. Her husband finally got on an extension, and in between her disturbed statements, explained to me what was going on. He said, "This is the woman you've been getting these letters from, telling you that she's been in touch with Edgar Cayce. And that she's getting communications from him. She had to talk to you. And she was talking practically at the same time he was talking. And nothing she was saying was making any sense. When suddenly she stopped, and there was dead silence, and then suddenly she said, 'Mr. Cayce, your mother tells me to give you 2 red roses.' And then, in a burst, she went on with this gibberish, this impossible things. Actually, those were the only couple of sentences that made any sense whatsoever. I have been thinking about that ever since she said it. Because hanging by my mother's mirror during the latter part of her life in her bedroom was a little chart called a life seal given in her life reading, given in a reading for her rather, not her life reading, and drawn, the symbols drawn for her. There were 2 red roses in it. Florence Edmonds, to whom I'm going to make reference later on, who for many years conducted the research in our group working with prayer and meditation for healing, a wonderful person, told me shortly after my mother's death that she had had a dream about her, and that she'd told her in the dream, "When I communicate with Hugh Lynn, or try to, I will use as a symbol the 2 red roses in my life seal." What would you think about a telephone call like that? Our phone rings from all over the country frequently. It rang again the next day, and there was a lady on the other end of it who was very coherent. She said, "Mr. Cayce, I'm in touch with your father. I'm getting messages from him regularly. He first used the Ouija board with me, and then he used automatic writing. And he just told me that if I would call you," she was talking to the operator now, "and tell you that I was in touch with him, that you would accept a collect call." And I said, "Well, you go back and tell my father that if he wants to call me, that he'll have to pay for the call." Almost anything can happen. in this bewildering world of the psychic. How can we begin to make sense out of it? Man has begun to break it down and classify it and put it into certain areas and study it in certain ways. We could mention these, three of them, quickly, and I'm not going to discuss them until the question period, or if you wish to discuss them then. The approach through the study of the spontaneous cases, the collection of all the various experiences that average people have and that may be classified and studied and worked with. I was getting ready to go on the a TV program where Hugh Downs was to be the moderator at Today program. And he and I were talking for just a moment before we were going to sit down. And he said, this subject is fascinating. So many people have experiences like this, of the psychic, of something that seems to work out. I said the other morning, my son came down and said, now we can't talk about this on the air. But my son came down and told the whole family, Dad, I've had a dream. It's a strange one, peculiar one. I dreamed that an Australian ship had been hit and was sinking. An Australian ship sinking. And he said, we all talked about it, laughed a little bit about it, forgot it. Until 3 days later, when the headlines on the morning paper was Australian ship hit and sinking, and it was shown, a picture of it, on the front of the New York newspaper, of an Australian ship. He said, you know, when I think about Australia, I think about kangaroos, but I just don't think about Australian ships. He said, probably just a coincidence. Yes. Dr. Ryan's wife, J.B. Ryan's wife, has produced one of the most interesting books in the field on this study of the spontaneous cases. And if you wish to pursue it, you can move through the study in your own experience, your associate's experience, or the catalog cases of the spontaneous. There's an approach to, as most of you know, through the laboratories. And all of it doesn't have to do with the same kind of laboratory work as carried on by Dr. Ryan with the cards. There are some amazing things happening with it. Here is a man who has gone out on a limb just recently. Dr. Jules Eisenbud, a psychiatrist, an MD, who is bringing down on his head the scoffing and laughter and criticism of the scientific world, because he went into a laboratory with a man called Ted Serios, and under controlled, what Eisenbud believes to be controlled conditions, has watched Serios repeatedly think and impress a Polaroid film that he has never been close to or never touched. Thought, the power of thought, so focused, even in the mind of a man who has great problems at an emotional level, yet acting in this strange fashion. I talked to Dr. Stevenson, Ian Stevenson, at the University of Virginia, very shortly after he had had Ted Serios in his laboratory there. And he confirms some of the statements that Dr. Eisenbud has made with physicists and magicians and all kind of people watching, that Serios, never touching a Polaroid film, never touching the camera, can somehow think without ever pressing the button on the camera and somehow affect that film to get pictures that can be made out. It's amazing that anything at all shows up on a film of that kind. All kinds of strange things are going on in the laboratories as they begin to study and examine and check and work with the phenomena of the psychic. Now, there is, of course, a final and important way in which you check the ESP phenomena, and that's through the study of the gifted person, the unusual person who seems to have more of this extrasensory perception than the average. I think such a man was the subject of this book, There is a River by Thomas Chagrew, and the other books that you've heard mentioned and that you know are written about him. I should like to relate a story that is fairly up to date that gives us some little pause and reason for, we think, going into more and more depth in the study of the Educasi data. The 14,000 psychic readings that are in those files up there in our library.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Casey on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Hugh Lynn Casey.
I have here a list of MDs who attended the first conference, medical conference, held by the Educasi Foundation under the direction of Dr. William McGarry, an MD in Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. McGarry got together some 25 MDs and psychiatrists who have been following, who are interested in, some have been working with, data from the Educasi readings. These doctors were brought together, and there were reports made by some of them on work that they were doing. One of the reports was a report by Dr. McGarry, and the report or the case started with the back of There is a River. You will find there an account of a case called scleroderma. Upstairs in the room just above us, there's a young man sitting. I call him young because he's about the same age I am. Who knows personally and observed and watched the person about whom this scleroderma case is written, and who observed and watched the results of the treatment from the readings given by Educasi. This is a kind of creeping paralysis of the skin. It hardens and gets painful, and gradually it starts with either the feet or the hands, and the person will die when this reaches a vital part of the body. This girl, many years ago, had been through the Vanderbilt Clinic and been sent home, and she was hard almost up to her waist when the treatments were begun. The readings indicated that this was caused by a tubercular-like germ that attacked and destroyed, and he didn't say tubercular, but tubercular-like, and it's described here in the back of There is a River. A young woman who had been told by naval doctors that she had scleroderma moved to Phoenix, Arizona, in order to get Dr. William McGarry to follow the treatments in the readings on her. He began the treatments with her 8 months ago, and we saw that woman and her husband. He brought her in, and he showed the pictures of her when he had begun the treatments and the condition of her hands, the hardness, the corded. The husband described it. She described it. The pictures showed it. And then he described the treatments as were outlined for these cases, and he then asked the doctors to come up. And only after 8 months, the symptoms had completely disappeared. Her hands were as pliable as mine are now. She was radiantly happy, obviously. She had been expecting to slowly die and had been told that that was what was going to happen to her. Dr. McGarry was rather radiant himself as he reported on this case. In the midst of it, he mentioned the tubercular-like germ that the readings had described as the basic cause. A Dr. Alan R. Cantwell, Jr., M.D. from Los Angeles, a dermatologist, jumped up straight, practically in the air, as he heard that report. He got up and went off to his room in the motel where he was attending and staying, brought back a report from a conference in Mexico City where three doctors from Los Angeles, dermatologists, this was a special one for dermatologists held at the in Mexico City, where they had reported that these doctors had found a tubercular-like germ as the cause of what they were calling the scleroderma, 40 years after Edgar Cayce said it. I think we've got reason to work with this psychic data in these readings. This is why we have gone into some depth and over a period of years have cross-indexed and begun to study and experiment and to test and to work with this material. Moving from the MDs, we will move to the osteopaths and to the chiropractors with material that is special interest to them, and then out to gradually experimentation and testing and work with the many ideas that deal with the causes and the treatment for a variety of physical problems. This is a very practical kind of ESP research that we are discussing here. Now, it is really the background against which the whole program that we are carrying on here has developed. And I suggest that within Edgar Cayce's case, it is the basis for the steady, solid, growing interest. There are many of us, and I am one, who read many of the other readings and can't understand them, work with them, try them out, try to dig through them, try to understand the language. When you get into this realm of the physical, you can measure it and work with it and test it in very practical fashion. As a result, the audience have grown, the public has grown, the membership has grown, and there are more of you here this afternoon. There is a triangle that I've used several times in talking that describes this. It would be a triangle created here, and it's almost created back there in the press now, and next time you see me I may have it in physical form, with Dr. Pike on one point and Dr. Stevenson on another and the four Beatles over here on the other. And I suggest to you that with a former bishop of the Episcopal Church talking about communication with his dead son, and a psychiatrist from the University of Virginia running around the world trying to establish evidence for survival of bodily death through checking out these cases on reincarnation, and the Beatles, the four of them, turning and moving and beginning to write music, I understand, that's moving more toward meditation and more toward a study of reincarnation that they're undertaking. I understand just two of them are there now, starting on a 2-month course in India with a special teacher. This encompasses a lot of people, a widespread growing interest. Now, what is this that's involving people so? This afternoon, we should answer this, what it is, and who's got it? Who has this psychic nature, this ESP potential? And if they've got it, can you develop it? Now, I would like to turn quickly to Edgar Cayce again, and so that through him, in a few stories, brief stories, we can begin to see a kind of variety of the ESP that he seemed to develop and have, and we can look at it and use these as examples later. I was sitting one day, Mrs. Turner was present, and we were in New York, and my mother was here with my brother. I was taking the readings, and that is giving the suggestions for them. And this lady had a physical reading, and she was sitting in the room. And when Edgar Cayce finished it, he then started again, and you never knew what this man was going to say when he was unconscious. But he started again. He just interrupted me, didn't pay any attention to my suggestion to wake up, and he started over again and said, "Now I have the body of so-and-so," and he mentioned somebody down in Georgia, and then he dictated a telegram which should be sent to this man. We didn't know who he was. We'd never heard of him. Mrs. Turnite turned out had never heard of him. No one in the room knew him. When my father became conscious again, he didn't know him. But do you know that back here at Virginia Beach, a letter arrived the next day from this man asking for a reading? I suggest to you that this is a kind of openness and readiness at the unconscious level to perceive, to pick up, to try to help just someone who was thinking about asking and wanting a reading. It's a strange business that occurred. Not often did this happen with Edgar Cayce, but when it did happen, it broke the normal trend of the activities in the study. Many times after these readings, and this too, people sat around every once in a while and were waiting for. Edgar Cayce would begin talking like this, and instead of talking about somebody else that he started giving a reading for, that had not written in yet, or maybe the letter was on the way, he would begin talking with people who had passed on. As if he had stopped somehow as he came back down, I like to think of it as that shaft of light that he followed, and would stop and talk with them. And you had an eerie feeling that there were people there you couldn't see, and that he could see, and that he was conversing with, and then you would sometimes, it would be so interesting, that you'd go back and get another reading and find out what the person on the other side had said to Edgar Cayce and put the two together, because all that the stenographer could write was what Edgar Cayce said. And then we'd have to get the reading to fit what the other person had said together, and you'd get the total conversation. You'll find one such conversation in that booklet, God's Other Door, which is one of those dealing with this business of communication. He didn't give much evidence in this area, but there's some interesting material there. Edgar Cayce, too, had a strange capacity and ability, which we all knew he had, which grew, I think, a bit during the latter part of his life, or perhaps he talked more about it. But he saw more about people than you and I could. He saw color. He saw auras, let's call it. There is a new book on a breakthrough to creativity that is published by a psychiatrist that is being reviewed in the journal now. That's a study of people who can see auras in a different way.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Cayce on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
I remember two times that Edgar Cayce saw something that other people couldn't see, and both of these were strange incidents. He had given a reading for a very prominent woman in this country. If I mentioned her name, I think almost everybody here would know her. Perhaps some of the younger people wouldn't. But she was very famous, and it was proposed that she was going to find some way to introduce Edgar Cayce to the very top people in America. And so she had invited him for tea. And we went to tea in her apartment in New York. And it was one of the most beautiful, one of the most luxurious apartments I have ever seen. And we got in, and the very correct butler brought in, he was all dressed up, you know, in one of these short white things and all, and a beautiful gentleman. And he came in with the tea, and she came in all dressed up for what today would be a very modern costume, and curled up on a big lion skin over on her sofa in the corner with this beautiful window back of her, and composed herself. My father had his cup of tea, and I had my cup of tea, and hers was sitting over there. And she said, "Mr. Cayce, now tell me, what can I do for you?" And my father put down his tea and said, "Mrs. So-and-so, I don't think you can do anything for me," and got up and left. I mean, he just walked out right then. And I followed him, apologizing and a little confused. Needless to say, we have never seen that woman since. But I have often wondered, and he never would tell me, what he saw. Nor did he tell me what he saw one night when he was speaking with three doctors in a massed meeting, because the hall was full in the ballroom of the McAlpin Hotel. And we had had a report from a man that he had, the reading for the man had gotten him out of the mental institution. And this man had come forward and shaken his hand. We didn't know the man was even there. And it had been a very dramatic moment. One of those moments you could have cut the air up and handed a piece of it to people. And suddenly afterwards, there was whole hubbub, and I didn't even see the little woman. But somehow, a little tiny woman who had come in out of the rain had gotten to my father, and he'd scribbled a note. His notes looked pretty much like prescriptions. You can't read them unless you've seen a lot of them. And she stuck it in my hand, and it asked me to cancel the reading for the next morning, that appointment it had been made, and give this woman the reading. It turned out that the reading was for her daughter, who was in a mental institution. It cost the association something in the neighborhood of $4,000 to get that woman out of that mental institution. But the readings insisted that she was not insane, and that an injury had brought on the disturbance that she was suffering from. She later, with all the members of her family, had readings from Educasey. I don't know what he saw that night about that little lady, that mother, that had somehow just stumbled in out of the rain and heard this amazing story and had grabbed it to help her daughter, who was in a mental institution, and helped her with it. I've watched Edgar Casey at times when he was physically ill, as he was at times with paralysis of the throat. That old ailment came back, and he couldn't talk at all. And he would lose consciousness, and you would give him a suggestion that the circulation would be increased in this area of his body, so that the pressures and tensions would be relieved. And you would sit there and watch this flesh grow as red as this dress, or redder, deeper red than this suit here in front. And then at the end, hear him in a clear voice say, "It's all right now." And then you'd wake him up. This man had a remarkable control of this flesh body of his. This too was part of this psychic capacity that we're talking about. In 1926, on an August afternoon, I was present when Edgar Casey suddenly, in an aside, said, "A very strange thing is going to happen around the 23rd of October of this year." This was in August. Now, this is not much looking ahead. It's not fantastic prophecies, but that prophecy that afternoon triggered quite a bit of study of Edgar Casey as a prophet. For he said then, around the 23rd of October of this year, there will be, within a few days, and he named the days, a violent earthquake in Japan, a severe earthquake in California, and a most severe storm in the West Indies. Years later, a geologist studying the material caught this point, checked it all out in detail, and found that there indeed had been these earthquakes and this tremendous, worst storm in the history of the West Indies, all within and around that 3-day period that Edgar Casey had somehow seen from that sleeping state. And now that August afternoon. What is this business now? ESP potential, the psychic nature of man. In Edgar Casey's terminology, this is the soul, the spiritual nature of man that we're talking about. Not some mental phenomena, not some coincidence and strange phenomena of the body alone, but the spiritual nature of man that is involved. And this is why we believe that it is so important. That it has to do with the soul, the concept of that eternal part of us that continues on, that is the real part of us, and that what we are seeing are just the outer phenomena that are manifestations of the breaking through of the spiritual nature of the soul quality of man. Do you know, it would be very helpful for all of us if we could somehow find and be sure that this is within us, that is what we really are, rather than this hunk of matter that we are so confused and bewildered and tied up in. This is what he says he's talking about. But Edgar Cayce goes on, and he develops in great detail, and this is the basis for much of the lecturing and the study and the experimentation that is going on and will go on in greater depth here as we move further and further into this material in testing and checking it. He insists that these phenomena of the psyche, the potential, relates to, it affects the chemistry of the body. That it is actually the chemistry of the changes in the nerves and in the brain and in the actual chemistry of the body itself at the glandular, the endocrine gland level. And he spells out these glands in detail, and talks about them in relationship to the various phenomena that relate to them. The clairvoyance, particularly, for example, that relates to the thyroid and parathyroid. The strange mediumistic capacity, that is, the communication with those who have departed, that is notoriously connected with the solar plexus center and all the work in psychical research with the independent voice mediums, so-called. Now, here, these endocrine glands, to be specific, because we can't touch this except lightly here now, I'm talking about the seven gland centers that many of you who have had courses and classes and discussions here know much more about now. The gonads, the sex glands in the body, the cells of Leydig that have to do with the secondary, the male or female principle in you, depending on which one you happen to be showing right now. The other one is underneath, is still there. The adrenal glands on top of the kidneys, the thymus at the heart center. You know, you and I are very much like children in our approach to this whole subject of ESP. We misunderstand what we're seeing. We don't understand the capacity and the range and the reach of it. We don't understand what it means. We see it, and yet we don't know how to evaluate. We just completely misunderstand it because of our conditioning, perhaps. Gladys now told me a joke that fits this beautifully.
We'll be right back with more with Hugh Lynn Cayce on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Hugh Lynn Cayce.
Gladys now told me a joke that fits this beautifully. The other day, Gladys Turner is my father's secretary for many, many years. Mr. Turner, of course, are here in the headquarters working. He said that this little boy was talking with his mother. He was going to Sunday school regularly, and she was talking with him, and she was saying to him it was fall, and all the beautiful autumn colors were coming out. And so the mother was saying to him, "So Johnny, God has painted all of this last night, has just painted it." And it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous, isn't it? This is God's handiwork. Oh, and the little boy said, and mother, he just to think he did it all with his left hand. She said, Johnny, what in the world do you mean? He said, well, the Bible says that Jesus is sitting on his right hand. Oh, we misunderstand like children, too, like that four-year-old down here on the beach who had gotten sunburned and he was peeling. And he was coming up the steps there, and somebody heard him, overheard him muttering to himself, I'm 4 years old and I'm worn out already. I think, too, that like children now and then, we simply want ESP for the wrong reasons. We want to take advantage. We want to astonish somebody. We want to push our egos up a little bit. We want to stop the conversation and raise all the eyebrows. And if they don't go clear up, we make it up a little bit more and put it on a little thicker. Some psychic experience, some psychic ability. We are, in a way, like that child that was very small. He was, too, was just 4 years old. I know all my stories about children 4 years old today. This one was having lots of trouble, and he wanted his father to tell him how to protect himself. And so his father played around with him and told him exactly how to defend himself and to fight and so forth. And his father was a pretty good fighter, and he told him pretty well. And so soon as the father got home the next afternoon, this little boy came rushing in and he said, Dad, I've done it, I've done it, I've done it, I finally hit her. You know, too, I think we are like a child when we develop and begin to explore and we sense a little bit and then we begin to get tired. It's hard to give up the world. It's hard to give up all of the attention and the interest in the outer and the physical. And when it demands that it is the spiritual nature that must be brought forward, we've got to begin to act more like this, as we'll see in a minute, and begin to move in the spiritual direction, and we tire quickly. We tire like that little boy who was so excited and rushed off to school, got up real early the first day and rushed off to school and had a wonderful time at school. But the next morning when his mother woke him, he said, what do you mean? I got to go again? You and I won't give up too quick. As we begin to explore in these directions, we don't understand and we tire. We don't want the responsibility. We suddenly realize, as we begin to study the dream, as we begin to work even with meditation and prayer, as we begin to discipline ourselves a little bit, as we're going to talk about, we're suddenly faced with responsibilities, and we don't want to pay the price. Two, I think we force, once we catch a little bit of this, we get into lots of trouble as we rush out and try to tell other people about it.
It's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose will be speaking at the upcoming Be Your Own Psychic training course at the ARE from October 19th to the 23rd. She'll also be at the National Association of Transpersonal Hypnotherapists annual conference from October 27th to November the 1st in Virginia Beach. That will be located at the Barclay Towers Resort Hotel. Kimmy will be doing a mediumship certification class and will be doing gallery readings and private sessions during the week. To find out more, go to kimmyrose.com. That's KimmyRose.com. Well, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And what's today's thought for the day?
Today's thought for the day is reading 53:69-2. That there have been many problems and many questionings is true. Yet, when the entity is allowed or does allow itself to meditate upon the principles of the prompting which came from its study, its application of the law of the Lord, which is manifested in the precepts, the commandments, the Psalms, and the promise of Jesus. Little has been the fear of what the man force has to offer as to disturbing factors in the earth. Then, as would be given, keep that faith. I want to hear from you what you feel, because I just got a vision of Jesus on the side of the mountain when I was reading that. And I'm curious to what you feel.
Well, it seems perhaps we give a lot of power to what man will do when God has the final say. Maybe we see a lot of things going on and we think man is going to do this and that and these huge things. But if you look at the Psalms, yes, if you look at the commandments, if you look at what Jesus said, certain things will happen. And God has ordained these things to happen. And no matter how big the army is, no matter how hard man tries, he's not going to change what God is going to do. So we should put our faith in God and not the power of man.
Amen.
Well, thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks for going with me to the archives to hear Hugh Lynn Casey. You can hear more presentations by Hugh Lynn Casey at edgarcasey.org in the Members Only section under Media. Thanks also to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.